You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you. Burgers are best fresh from the grill. Well, more specifically, burgers with Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. It's so rich and creamy that it instantly makes any burger irresistible. And what backyard barbecue is complete without some potato salad? Not just any potato salad, of course. Potato salad highlights the rich, creamy goodness of Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. So if you want to take your barbecue season to the next level, stock up on Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. For great recipe ideas, visit Hellmann's.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
The Around the NFL Podcast. Eats, breathes, and shits football.
From the Chris Wessling Podcast Studio, it's Around the NFL, the flagship show, divisional round weekend edition. Pound for pound, the best weekend of football of the year. And the drama was excellent this weekend. Living up to the hype. We're down to four here. Dan Hansis with Greg Rosenthal, Mark Sessler. Sunday, January 28th, Kansas City Chiefs at Baltimore Ravens, 3 p.m. kickoff, CBS, 6:30 p.m. Eastern time on Fox. Lions at Niners from the Big Bell Bottom. The winners of those games play in Super Bowl 58 2 weeks from that day. Mark, three games left.
Yeah, and I think like that announcement alone by you is a very crystallized irritant to four fan bases who did not survive this weekend. But I really don't know if any of them can be put above what Buffalo's fan base has been through. We sat down and watched this game together for hours, and I don't know. Sometimes if there are football gods or whatever is sitting up there controlling all of this, the puppet masters, they have a sick sense of humor.
It's the beautiful part of doing this show that we will get to all four games, that every winner, loser, like you all get your due. And yet it's hard not to just feel overwhelmed by the enormity of this Bills Chiefs game. It's right before we tape, and it's Josh Allen, it's Patrick Mahomes. It's a game we've been building up to for 4 years, and in some ways it was so different. And then the ending being so similar, the only difference is we got a Bills fan with tears, covering himself up.
Eric didn't want to share that.
No, I wasn't talking to Eric. Instead of Chiefs fans with happy tears. It
was not the guy on the telecast.
Yes.
But Eric's probably crying as well, although he's a very strong man. I thought the Sunday games are, everyone is, and rightfully so, has been focused on Detroit, the city of Detroit, the rise of the program under Dan Campbell and how it's galvanized that whole area and how they're so easy to root for. I think from a personal standpoint, as we're starting the show, a little bit of a hangover because I've always felt a bit of a kinship with the Bills and their fans in the AFC East, and this feeling that when is it going to be your turn to get over the hump? And there are so many moments in the game we're about to talk about where it felt like this was different than other Bills teams, and yet it was not.
It's distinctly different than the other games too, because I think if you're a Texans fan or a Packers fan, there's a little bit of house money going on there, and there's hope for the future. It's like you're surprised almost to be here on some level. Tampa Bay, similar. No one expected Tampa Bay to go deep into the playoffs. The Bills came in with immense expectations, immense pressure, and the carpet was rolled out for them to finally do it this time around, to host the Chiefs in Buffalo, and the fate could not be more cruel. And I think, I feel like there's a weight to all of it. I feel exhausted.
I mean, look at the crowd, people literally emotional to the state of tears, and that is the power of sport, the power of the NFL, and the hold it has on Western New York and really everywhere. So let's get into it. The problem for the Bills is that to get over the hump, they had to beat the Chiefs. And that's the team that they have Patrick Mahomes. That's a problem. All right, to Orchard Park.
Chiefs 27, Bills 24, 147 to go.
No.
In the game on fourth down and nine for Buffalo. Placement down, Bass's kick is up, and the kick is no good. A little prophecy. Tyler Bass has struggled, and he just misses the kick. And the Chiefs will take over at the point of the missed kick. Their own 34-yard line as Tyler Bass misses this wide to the right. He missed. He skanked one wide to the left against Pittsburgh. And you just wonder, on the overcorrection, the Chiefs catch a break on a missed field goal by Buffalo.
Oh, Mitch Holtis rolling in.
Ooh, wow, a little...
Of course. Because you know what? WDAF with the call. Because the Chiefs were supposed to neatly move to the side this year. Bad year by their standards. Couldn't get anything right. But then they flip a switch, as the true great teams do. And it will drive you crazy if you're sick of watching the Kansas City Chiefs. But they don't care. Just like the dynasty before them, the Patriots, they didn't care either. As the Chiefs get that... The benefit, obviously, of a missed field goal there by Tyler Bass, the one that will live in infamy. Of course, not quite at the level of wide right in January 91, but wide right in January of 24 is something that will stick with us and Bills Mafia forever. Final score, 27-24. The Chiefs advance to the AFC Championship game for the
Sixth
consecutive year. Does anybody understand how difficult it is to get to the AFC title game, to get to a conference championship game 6 years in a row? I don't even care if you don't win them all. Just getting there, it's so difficult. So the Chiefs use a big play offense that was gone all season, Greggy.
Right.
They averaged 9 yards per play in this game, and the defense tightens up in the back end of this game to take one and rip the hearts out of Buffalo.
I felt like these teams switched bodies all season. We're wasted our time apparently talking about how this Chiefs offense, they're never going to get it together. And today they have 8 plays over 20 yards. They're moving the ball up and down the field. I know they got fortunate with that missed field goal, but let's be real. They were probably the more consistent team. They had some breaks really go against them later in this game. I know we'll get to. And I keep thinking about how all day Steve Spagnuolo was just daring Josh Allen to just stay patient, keep moving the ball up the field, keep calling those runs, keep taking the checkdowns. No big plays for the Bills. They literally did not have a throw over 15 yards in the game. He only had 2 that went over 10 yards in the air that were completed. And in nut cutting time, and Allen tried some deep shots that, through no fault of his own, weren't completed. You had the 60-plus yarder through the air to Diggs. Diggs didn't make it. You had the Sherfield catches that he couldn't get, but in the final drive for the Bills, before they kicked that field goal, first down, they try to stick with the run, burn a little more clock. Cook is stopped. They ran the ball great in the first half. Chiefs defense stepped up, stopped the run in the second half for the most part. Next two plays, and Tony Romo pointed it out on second down, Allen has crossers, short routes open, and instead of going for Diggs over the middle, he holds it. I can't kill the decision because he's got Shakir for the game-winning touchdown, but Chris Jones pushes Dawkins into Allen's plant leg. He can't extend. It doesn't get there. Third down, he holds the ball. That was just a bad decision. Trying to make a bigger play, doesn't get it. And in the end, Josh Allen is who Josh Allen is, and he went big game hunting. I think he played great today. But Patrick Mahomes played better, and the Chiefs' defense in the end played better, and they're just a great organization who is playing their best when it absolutely matters, and that's what dynasties do, and they are a dynasty.
Yeah, I mean, both teams combined for scores on 9 of the first 11 drives. Then it turns into an emblazoned dogfight where that dries up a little bit, and it comes down to moments, because if you knew in this game that the Bills would have a Chiefs fumble go through the end zone, and you'd have a chance to take a possession away from Kansas City. It's that kind of game, and they do nothing with it. They fizzle out and punt right away. They're, on the previous possession, they go for a fake punt. Damar Hamlin, of all people, unable to convert, done on downs. Missed field goal comes two possessions later. Their final three possessions in a key, close, tight affair result in 0 points. They couldn't take advantage of the little opportunities and a big play offense that we've been used to your point, Greg, zero plays over 20 yards. That, not even like a Josh Allen big run or anything. And I feel guys,
they had 27 first downs. They were still like a good offense for most of the day until the fourth quarter. And they, then were. They were not.
But I think it's like, you have to look at, you know, we don't know what will happen with Stephon Diggs, but like Stephon Diggs is not a primary number one guy in this offense today the way that you would have hoped for.
Oh, they needed him.
They absolutely did.
And you can't be what you're not. And maybe Stephon Diggs got old fast. I don't know. Or maybe he's just not in a good headspace. Or maybe it's just the way sports work sometimes. And it's not your day and it's not your season. But there was something wrong with Diggs. And we had documented it on Thursday's show when you looked at his numbers, that he just hadn't been an explosive player. And yeah, that deep shot.
Can I say on Diggs just while we're there? Like, yeah. I think what is wrong with him in part is L'Jarius Sneed. In these two matchups, 19 targets, 45 yards.
Which is all great,
Greggy. Pay that man, L'Jarius Sneed.
And pay L'Jarius Sneed. That's all cool. But this goes back two and a half months.
Yes. And that throw by Allen was perfect.
Throw was there. He had him beat. He dropped it into his hands, Allen, and Diggs could not make the catch. And I'm not saying they win the game if they, because they end up getting into Kansas City territory anyway on that drive. But, you know, going back to this idea, I feel like in the second half, I felt it watching the game, and I feel like you could feel it in the building, and you could feel just watching the way the players were, the enormity of the moment. It felt like in Eric, I love you, buddy. I felt like we're watching a game where it was a sliding doors moment in Bills history. Like, this was going to be the half or the couple of possessions that will be remembered forever when they get past Mahomes and then beat the Ravens and go finally win a Super Bowl. And they had it in front of them after the horrendous Mecole Hardman turnover upon review. They survived the botched fake punt. And then they get the ball back again, and they can't move the ball. And then for that drive to stall, and then you leave it up to the kicker in January in Buffalo on a cold and windy day. Unbelievable. And that's what Patrick Mahomes was saying after the game about his defense and a little pep talk that he thought he should have given a little earlier.
I went over to the defense and I told him, I said, y'all shut it down and we'll win this football game. We'll go to the AFC Championship game. And they did, going into that fourth quarter. And I told him next time I'll try to tell him earlier.
And to the credit, of the Chiefs, because the Bills Greek tragedy side of it is easy to kind of get wrapped up into. But to the credit to the Chiefs, like the Patriots before them, they're that team that finds a way, especially this time of year, and they did it again.
Well, they did it the same way they've done it for 5 years.
Weren't supposed to this year.
But I'm just saying, like, it was so crazy to think going into the third quarter, they were trailing in this game, and their offense at that point was averaging 9 yards per play, and they hadn't been stopped. I'm not counting it as a stop when they ran one play before halftime. The Chiefs had literally scored every time they had the ball. They were averaging 9.3 yards per play, and they entered the fourth quarter trailing. That's what happened in the Dick Vermeil days. That was the stuff that happened early in this Mahomes run when you had Brady and Gronk going up and down the field in the first half. Their defense actually didn't show up very well today, and it didn't matter because Mahomes and this offense were cooking. Kelce making big plays. The first play of the second half, Mahomes with a dot to MVS. Then later in the second half, where Mahomes evades the pass rush, there was no Bills pass rush today, steps up another one down the field to MVS. They ran the ball really well. Like, this was a peak Chiefs offensive performance that certainly makes you think, like, wonder if they have one or two more of these in them.
That's all they need.
Yeah, and it's 2 weeks in a row now where they've answered questions on that side of the ball. And I think Kelce this whole season has not felt to me, obviously, like peak Kelce, but he showed up today in a big way and crossed the barrier. They've got the most, you know, Mahomes and Kelce now have the most quarterback target touchdowns in playoff history. They passed Brady and Gronk. It looks like it. That feels like it. That's who the Chiefs are. And there was just something inevitable about Mahomes. There wasn't a moment in this game where you felt any doubt coming from him. And this whole thing that he's on the road, I think he enjoyed being on the road.
Oh, he loved
it. I think he enjoyed being in this environment. And they took that challenge on. Chris Jones was going at the Bills fans before the game. And that's a lot. You know, you're watching Bills fans shedding tears at the end of this affair. And I think it's like it is the inevitability of the Kansas City Chiefs that they're going to find a way in any environment, any situation to show up when it matters most. And the doubts about their offense flutter away at this point.
Here's the annoying thing, again, about like this job, what we do for a living. We're supposed to be paid off this time of year now because we watched all the Chiefs tape all year. And how many times did we say, man, if they haven't figured it out by now, it's just not going to happen. And the way they were able to they started it last week and they had some red zone issues, but really did. I think they were over 400 yards, Greg, as you pointed out earlier, last week in their win. This week it looked vintage. And then it's just like weird stuff goes on. Again, I struggle to hate the Chiefs, even though they're a team at this point everyone should get sick of. And I think there's a little bit of that pushback that kind of began this year with some Chiefs fatigue. I think Taylor Swift's involvement with the team indirectly has led to that. But I can't because they are just not an unlikable squad. But the things that do get me mad, because it shouldn't be that way, because it isn't like this for any other team. MVS shouldn't all of a sudden be like making incredible plays downfield like he's making in this game. The guy could not catch a cold for basically his whole career, and now is making big-time plays. You're seeing play now. Isaiah Pacheco, I like Isaiah Pacheco. He runs like peak, like Roger Craig now. Like I mean, this team, their ability to find ways to get it done with obviously Mahomes at the center of it, it's commendable and, yes, annoying.
It's their O-line, too. Today, Ed Oliver didn't have a pressure, I think, for the first time in 2 years.
Wow.
He had a one-on-one matchup with Joe Tooney most of the day. Daquan Jones didn't get after it. Von Miller is a total no-show. You know, one of the most regrettable contracts, unfortunately, for them because of the injury, and he couldn't come back, and they just couldn't get after him. And then you look at the box score, and it's Mahomes 17 for 23, 215 and 2. And yet I think of this as, like, one of his best games ever. I know he missed those two throws.
That was it.
In the red zone where back-to-back plays, essentially, where they were trying to go in. But other than that, just the decision-making, everything's on point. It's fun to watch greatness, but you're right. There is something about this team when it really comes to it. Like, the defense did make those plays. Suddenly, they have five tackles for losses. Suddenly, they're in the Bills' backfield for all these negative gains. CEH, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, like, a draft bust. Couldn't get on the field all season, a first-round pick, and suddenly he's popping up for, like, a big 28-yarder. And there is just something about this team that now that we're here, even though I wanted this Bills team to win, you do look at all the injuries that they were taking advantage of, the linebacker position for Buffalo. Certainly thin at the playmakers. Shakir was going in and out. The tight ends were getting hurt. And you do think, like, this Chiefs team is a little healthier. They're peaking, and it does set up we'll get into it during the week, but it does set up a beautiful matchup next week.
Yeah, because this was a game where it's like you start to look back at the bodies that are lost for Buffalo. Like, Matt Milano was missed in this game. AJ Klein was picked on a lot in this one. And if I knew going in that the Chiefs would have the ball for 22 plus minutes and the Bills 37 plus, I would have thought that's what Buffalo wants.
Yeah.
They're keeping the ball out of Mahomes' hands, and they must be going on long scoring drives. They must be converting. And instead, it's like the Chiefs did so much with so little time. And it's like 9.3 yards per pass for the Chiefs, 4.8 for the Bills. Big plays versus no big plays.
Now, we're about to throw to some Josh Allen sound. I just want to Bills fans, if you're listening, and by the way, great people, just tough as nails, if you're listening to the show, because I know it can't be easy. But even if Bass pipes that one, he'll tie the game, but the Buffalo's inability to really finish off that drive, they were a lot of trouble anyway, because that would have been with 1:47 to play. You're sending Mahomes back on the field with two timeouts. So the offense's inability to execute in the fourth quarter, and this is a game, by the way, that had five lead changes by the first minute of the fourth quarter, but their inability to score and execute, they were shut out in the fourth quarter, really is what will haunt them throughout this offseason. Here's Josh Allen on another year of what if.
Sucks. Losing sucks. losing to them, losing anybody at home sucks.
Hmm. Yeah, that about accurately sums it up.
It's such a bummer. They had Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer take the podium together, and they talked about how they came in at 2017, and it just hurts for the guys like them that came in together and are still there, the ones that kind of change this entire culture, where, like, even making the playoffs, they're sending Andy Dalton, you know, thousands and tens of thousands of dollars in charity money just because they got Tyrod Taylor into the playoffs to lose a wild card game. That's how much it meant. That's how much they needed that culture to be changed. And here, so many of those guys, including Milano and those two, have been there throughout. And it did feel a little bit, and Poyer and Hyde, every year you're not sure if they're going to come back. Poyer, by the way, had that heroic punch out on Hardman on the goal line. Like, that would have been a defining play for him. I think he's 35 years old, and you just don't know how many of those guys will be back next year. I don't know if Stefan Diggs will be back, and I think they knew the enormity. You feel that every year, and I'm sure it hurts McDermott because he did such a good job, I think, coaching up this defense throughout the back half of the year, really scheming things up, and he just lost today. Like, scheme, players, everything, Andy Reid and Mahomes put it on McDermott and his defense in a big spot. And you can't, and he's going to say you can't change the defensive play caller. He already changed the offensive play caller, unless they give Bills fans on Twitter their wish, at least some that I saw, and they're like bringing back Bill Belichick. It's not happening.
Back in August, we did the urgency meter, had the Bills on top, and you pushed back pretty hard on it, Greg, but I saw this season as they were at the top of the urgency meter, and I thought the window of this particular Bills team, this Josh Allen led team, but with some of the players on the defense you mentioned, with Stefon Diggs as the alpha dog of the offense, like, it was going to be telling what happens after this year. And I really do think we're going to probably see a different Bills team. I think McDermott's obviously going to be back. Allen's not going anywhere. Milano will be healthy again. But at a certain point, I mean, how many times are you going to keep running into this wall in the AFC playoffs before you have to make substantial changes around the quarterback and coach? We'll see. They have a fascinating offseason, because how do you approach from where they're at right now?
They absolutely do. And I think it starts with, you know, like, last offseason, there was drama laced around Stefon Diggs. I think we're right back there again to find out his future. But the desperation to win, to get past this step, showed when they fired their offensive coordinator midseason. Like, this team would do anything to get it right. And you're back where you started from. A bunch of guys are probably not going to be back. And then you're hoping next year that your quarterback stays healthy, that the division doesn't change too much, that you can be this Bills team and add weapons. But it's like, the journey back to get to this place is only more pressure laden and more impossible to get to. And I think you see the difference between a Chiefs team that's like, who cares what we've been for the past 4 months? We're going to be something different now. And they knew it. It's like Mahomes in that comment saying, I'm going to go tell the defense, you do it, I'll get us to the AFC Championship. Do your part. The Bills are wondering, how do we get past this? And it's another season ending with a massive question.
Well, they know more than anyone, the Bills, how tough it is to get here. They had to win, what, 6 straight games to get to this point, and you were feeling like they were that team. And they did make a lot of changes. They turned into kind of a heavy personnel, run the ball well. They ran it for 182 today. Like, don't get it lost, I think, in the final few plays. Like, Josh Allen played outstanding in this game. The reason this game's a classic, it's going to be, you know, a game of the week tomorrow, but to me, it's the game of the year so far, is Mahomes and Allen brought their A games. Allen was not letting them lose there for 3 quarters, and I know there's a couple plays at the end, but if his receivers made plays for him, kind of like we've been wanting the Chiefs receivers to make plays for Mahomes for a lot of the game, like, he'd be the hero. So it was 2 of the very best, and unfortunately for Bills fans, like, a familiar finish, except for the snowballs being thrown at Mahomes as he, like, gleefully ran off the field.
Exactly. That was a great image. Jason Kelce with his shirt off, bellowing from the luxury suite, upstaging even Taylor Swift.
Exiting the suite,
great moment.
Down into the stands amongst Bills fans. I mean, he was slightly
juiced up. For some reason, I wouldn't do that in Baltimore. I don't know. I guess Jason Kelce can do whatever he wants anywhere.
Kelce was hammered.
Yeah.
Like, let's not get that twisted. I'm not judging the man. I think he's early into retirement now.
Well, they said
having a great time, but he was
sauce. But, like,
faced.
When he gave his speech, apparently, when they won the Super Bowl at the parade, he was asked, I think Shilkopedia, like, tweeted this out, like, he was asked how many beers he had in his system at that point. And he said 20. And then, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, how drunk were you? He was like, it was like a 5 out of 10. So who knows what was going on today?
He's one of those heroic, like, Wade Boggs-like beer drinkers. Like, he could do 40 beers from Seattle to Boston on a flight. The Mecole fumble.
The guy is drunk.
When Allen fumbles near midfield and somehow it doesn't get scooped up and they recover.
Oh.
The Allen rollout, I think it was a 26% completion probability to Shakir to put them ahead.
Oh, yeah. That was ridiculous. There's so many.
Earmuffs, Eric. I'm stunned. I can't believe this wasn't the day.
Right.
Eric, I can't believe this wasn't the game, the Buffalo game that you remember forever. I'm sorry, buddy.
No, I mean, you become calloused to it as a Bills fan. I mean, I actually was telling people today I felt like a little confident, and I've told them like that's probably not good because Buffalo's going to Buffalo, and I don't know. It all comes crashing down so quickly, and in a moment like that, I mean, all game I'm talking to Randy, we're watching this game, and Bass botched one last week. He had one blocked, and even his little extra points, they're kind of
a little dicey.
And I'm like, dude, he's tucking them in, and they go for it. And they get, there was a nice drive, and it's like, well, you kick it. I'm like, yeah, you got to kick it, tie the game. And like, do you trust your kicker? I'm like, hell no. But
I had a bad feeling about that kick.
Yeah,
no, they hit.
Said it seconds before he missed, and I thought that's too improbable. That's too evil.
It was just. And it was as soon as it was off the foot.
Yeah.
It was
never close.
They had their season on the line earlier that drive with a fourth down call. They convert that. Allen had a nice another third down on that. And then it all comes crashing down. And then the second it's over, you get a slack from me. It'd be like, hey, can we get some post game sound? We're going to want Allen really pouring his heart out.
That's the nature of the business, you guys. I'm a professional.
You're a pro, dude.
But you are.
They also could have gotten, by the way, even after the miss, if you get a stop, maybe miracle, a reverse 13 seconds can happen. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, give the Chiefs credit. They really were the better team, ultimately. And they proved it by icing the game there with two runs the ensuing drive. And that was it. So
that first drive, guys, it was like a 3rd-and-17, a 4th-and-1 conversion, overturned fumble. It's like it was a minute and a half in. And I'm like, my nerves are already through the roof. And I'm like, this is going to be one of those days and something's going to go horribly
Sports
wrong.
Are the worst.
It sucks.
It's also tough when your team keeps losing to the same team in the playoffs. And Big Funk knows that with the Packers and the Niners. And it's like you've got this situation. Right. It's like. It's this resounding, repeating note over and over that's an evil note. Yeah.
I know that basketball is completely different than football.
Entirely.
But it does make me think of when we're talking about what do the Bills need to
football
do.
Football is completely different than basketball.
As a Knicks fan in the early 90s, could not get past Jordan. Couldn't do it. And then it was like, is there something wrong with the Knicks? Well,
Jordan
Michael Jordan.
Needs to go play baseball.
Michael Jordan is the problem. They had incredible teams in 91, 92, 93, and they just couldn't get him. And, that's the pain. You don't want Josh Allen to be remembered as the guy that just happened to play at the same time as Brady straight into Mahomes, and you'll just end up always being the bridesmaid. But it's hard not to think that way. He's still got a lot of years, but it's been.
Yeah. We had the Mahomes-Jordan debate in 2018 or 2019 when Mahomes is making that run. It's like, he is the best football player I've ever seen. And at no point has that even dipped a little bit. And he just proves it again and again. It's crazy.
All right. Let's move. Let's move to the other AFC game. It was played on Saturday. It was the number one seed Ravens against the upstart Texans, a game that was a dead heat at halftime. And then the Ravens showed who was who.
It's Lamar. Holding himself, runs to the left, he's to the 5, Lamar's in, touchdown Ravens, we're going to have a championship game in Baltimore because the hay's in the barn.
Lamar just ran through the tunnel, went to the locker room.
He went Bo Jackson, he's still up the tunnel.
And I was getting ready to say, there's no way they can run this boot again, and they did it.
Oh, you can do it when you're the Ravens, who just punish people. Do what they want. And good job, Jerry Sandusky and Rod Woodson, WBAL, because of course, old fogies. No, that's Bo Jackson running up the tunnel against the Seahawks in 87 on Monday Night Football. Lamar with a nice tribute in a 34-10 win over the Texans. Like I said, this game was 10-10 at the half, Mark Sessler. But then the Ravens came out, flawlessly execute a go-ahead touchdown drive, and they just never looked back. In fact, they never gave up a touchdown on defense. The only score for Houston was a punt return in the first half.
I thought this game was a perfect portrait of how complete the Ravens have become. If it was a situation where early in the year they were warming up on offense and learning the system, this was an absolute exclamation point of how dominant they can be. And like, I honestly think they played a team that's going to be around for many years to come in the Texans with C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud faced more pressure in this game than he has in any other game of his career, and it looked like it. And I just mentioned that the Bills, in a losing effort, had the ball for 37-plus minutes. The Ravens had it for 37-plus minutes in this because they were able to run the ball for 229 yards, because Lamar Jackson was magical on the ground, because he was nearly flawless through the air, because their defense absolutely choked the life out of the Houston Texans and made what looked like a special passing game under Bobby Slowick and C.J. Stroud a week ago look completely lost at sea for the entirety of the second half. Because, yes, it was 10-10, big special teams play for the Texans, and Lamar Jackson talked about going into the locker room at halftime and refusing to tell the public what he said because it was filled with too much language that a sailor would speak.
I would love
and,
to see that.
I mean, I think that says a lot about Lamar Jackson versus him a couple of years ago. And, Greg, it was way back in, like, week 4 or 5 that you talked about the Ravens as a Super Bowl team. And I thought this was maybe Greg being a little hyperbolic about his Lamar-me and all that business. But they look completely impressive from every angle. And they absolutely proved, I thought, against the Texans that it really doesn't matter who they play. They're going to be who they are.
I would love to hear that halftime speech. And it's funny, this game actually did remind me of the game in London we saw a little bit, in the sense that there's a lot of Ravens games like this where it's like not that impressive for a while. And just steadily, they just smother you. Just every little aspect of the team smothers you. And then suddenly you look up at the end of the game and you're like, actually, that was never really a game. They took over, and part of it is they just have answers. They have answers with personnel, like Flowers running some big boy routes there, likely turning into a great red zone threat. Obviously, Lamar has almost a perfect game, 16 for 22 for 152, and then 100 yards on the ground, just like no mistakes. But
it's one of the best all-around games for a quarterback you'll ever see in the playoffs.
Right. It kind of reminded me of Mahomes' game today, because if you just looked at the box score, it's like it wouldn't seem that crazy other than the 100 yards rushing. But I also think they have answers defensively. Like, Monken knew that the blitz was giving them trouble in the first half. They just knew exactly what to do to it in the second half, those adjustments. Lamar made them. Monken made them. And I don't think that was going to happen with Greg Roman there. And McDonald being their defensive coordinator, I don't think it would have been as complete with Don Martindale there. So they did a really good job. Just personnel, coaches, everything right now is humming.
Yes. So when you have Lamar playing at this level and playing this confident and the running game humming the way it is, they're going to be very difficult to beat. It's my big takeaway from the game was the defense. And you know how I think it was, I got to give credit to Mark, you're a cinephile. Who directed 28 Days Later?
The zombie. Well, I'll have
Danny
to
Boyle.
Oh, Danny Boyle. Sure.
But I wish you would have known that off the top of your head.
I do too. I love open questions on a show that thousands of people are listening to.
Danny Boyle directed a movie in 2002 called 28 Days Later. A classic zombie apocalypse film with a twist. All of a sudden, the zombies, who you remember throughout pop culture history being kind of slow, lumbering, kind of unstoppable, but easily you could run past them or run around them. You could bonk them on the head with a 2x4. These zombies were fast, and they come at you in waves and gangs, and they're horrifying, the zombies, and it started a whole new way of looking at them in that genre. That's how I look at this Ravens defense, the way they swarm with speed and power. And even if the first guy misses the tackle, the second guy is coming right behind him. If he dodges out of that guy, the third guy wallops him. And you saw that over and over and over. Houston could not get a clean look, could not get to the open field, could not make a play. And yeah, they just suffocated their offense, an offense that was kicking ass going into this
game. I would note that Danny Boyle did Train Spotting as well. And in that film, those zombies were on heroin. The Ravens do not appear to be have heroin in their bloodstream.
Thank you.
That's my comment.
I love that one, too.
There is something about, like, I don't know what's in the water there in Baltimore, what might McDonald's doing. Because, yeah, they have guys like Arthur Millette.
I'm sorry, one second. Were there zombies in Trainspotting?
No, but I'm saying they were all on heroin. And they lost to society.
Zombies, yeah.
A different type of zombie.
I felt you.
Go ahead, Greg.
Thank you, Greg.
Great movie. Great movie.
I'm talking literal zombies.
Yes. In 28 Days Later, literal zombies, yes.
The drug.
Right.
That metaphorical turns zombies. You into,
right.
But the slow lumbering zombie.
Yes. But in Baltimore, yeah. It's like,
go ahead.
You give a little bit of that zombie juice to Millette, you give a little bit to Clowney, and instead of like getting, you know, trashed and quitting on your team at the end of the season, it's like zombies.
They're quick twitch monsters.
Clowney's in your lap all game. Matt Abike, I thought, had a great game. He just kept winning that matchup over and over and over. That was against Shaq Mason for the most part. And I'm with you. They just kept throwing so many different looks. Actually, at halftime, the Texans had more yards on offense than the Ravens because they had that one decent drive that they ended up settling for a field goal. But for the most part, it was just good night. And then eventually, like the play calling, I really was impressed. That call we heard with Lamar where they kind of do the end around, but they have Ronnie Stanley pulling and it's like a misdirection. They ran that twice just to perfection. The likely touchdown on an RPO, I mean, that was
he's been such a huge contributor.
That was a beautiful play call too, that like, what can you do there? Everyone is out there blocking on the edge. Lamar probably could have run it in, but instead he throws it to Likely, who makes these great catches. They might get Andrews back, and Chiefs will be a very
but don't
tough
ice
test
Likely
for them.
Because Andrews right. back is Likely is a legitimate yes. player on
oh
the
no
team.
You can use both, you know.
Let's listen to John Harbaugh, who has a man that's going to be named MVP in a couple of weeks and maybe be playing in the Super Bowl a couple of days after that.
I thought Lamar was going to play great, but he's played great all year, you know, and just now it's more important than ever. He's been locked in from day one. That's his term. And we've all kind of ran with that. And I think he's directed this whole thing. But like he said, we got more work to do.
It is a lesson, I think, to the entire league, because it looks more mystifying than ever that we spent the majority of the offseason wondering if the Ravens wanted to keep Lamar Jackson, if they were planning to, or if they thought maybe they would free themselves, and no other team in the league, including the Atlanta Falcons most noticeably, like really pursued Lamar Jackson. He was sort of a man that like
we've covered some bonkers offseason stories.
That's crazy.
That one will forever stand out. And I feel like, you know, even in the moment and on this show, if you go back, we were all a little puzzled, especially some of the teams that were choosing to make statements and let it be known that they weren't interested. Teams that had quarterbacks like Desmond Ridder being like, no, we're not interested in that business. But this has now turned into the kind of worst case scenario for all those teams, because it's almost now going to be, if this team ends up going all the way, that's legendary, like the where that was in summer. But also the Ravens kind of catch a break too. Unless they were playing, you know, chess when everyone else was playing checkers. Like, if another team had the good sense to go hard after Lamar, you would have lost this guy that's about to get you to the Super Bowl potentially.
Right. I've seen tweets from like Adam Schefter where it was like, where they make it out like, oh, the Ravens were never going to let him go. It's like, well, what if they just front loaded
a massive
offer and they were willing to give up two first round picks? Are you sure about that? And more to the point, whether they fully guaranteed it, and it's a conversation for another day. But to me, there is a level of quarterback, and I would put Lamar Jackson at this level where it's like, just guarantee the contract if it's like 4 years. Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes and Joe Burrow and Lamar and CJ Stroud, these guys, they're going to get to those 4 or 5 years. They will be on the team for those 4 years. So just guarantee them the money anyways. It's not that big of a deal.
It's a brutal sport. That's what
I get.
There
it,
is
but
a higher level of danger than other sports.
They're sort of like, there are massive.
Well, not sort of. A catastrophic injury in year one of the contract.
I just mean there are catastrophic injuries in basketball and baseball all the time, too.
Reggie.
And they survive giving out massive. Like I'm just saying, a four-year contract for a quarterback, if someone had done that, they could have had him.
There is one thing about the Ravens that I thought stands with me going into next week's game, that there was a lot of talk about, A, the fact that Lamar Jackson and the Ravens have crumbled in the playoffs no matter what the regular season looked like, and they had this extra rest, and would they come out flat? And they did come out flat. Like, their final three drives in the first half, three punts, were for -7 net yards. And it's like, psychologically, is that when the Ravens can be broken by a young team with nothing to lose? And to come out three straight touchdowns and a field goal, it's like, cool. I think this Ravens team is different. And
Troy had it pegged. He said before the kickoff to start the third quarter, This is a very important drive.
Right.
You got to go and get a touchdown and kind of shut down that energy, as it were. And I think they absolutely did. Here's D'Amico Ryans, who obviously did a tremendous job as a rookie head coach. He does have a bright future with this team. The future has to wait until September for them.
I think our team learns that, hey, we know we're right there at halftime.
Handsome
right?
Guy.
So they know they were toe-to-toe with sure. a really good team. Right? And I hope our team just understands that moving forward, right, at all costs, you got to finish. Right? And you want to continue to move forward, continue to play in big games. It'll always be about executing and finishing.
I see why you want to stand with that man and lock up a game and a team coached by that man.
Yeah. Well, he's only a few years removed from being on a team, so.
But it was a mistake.
I don't think so, ultimately, because I was doing it, A, for the show, and B, to, you know.
That was a mistake in the sense that
yes.
locked up a team that
lost. Well, if I lose, that clearly is a mistake, so.
They were also like 10-point underdogs or something. So
It was perhaps, from a logical standpoint,
right.
misguided. I understand where you're coming from.
And I, conversely, locked the other team.
I understand that. But that's why I did what I did.
And the second half standings are just tightening up. Greggy is getting a little nervous. We'll see how he did in his lock a little bit later.
A race nobody outside of yourself is following.
Ryans, they're going to be great for a while. Like, they have their premium positions really well covered. If you think about, like, Laremy Tunsil, left tackle, all pro. TJ Stroud, enough said. Maybe the most valuable contract in the league. If you think about it, because he's got three more years on this rookie deal and he's already this good. And I thought he played pretty well. I know it sounds crazy. They only scored 3 points. He did not have a bad game Sunday. He actually made, or Saturday, he made a lot of throws against pressure. He had virtually no chance, but I was curious. I went to check the PFF score. I bet it's not that bad. And it's not. It's not good, but it's just like a solid.
Well, he doesn't game. Turn the ball over.
Right.
Get Tank Dell back.
Right.
Get Derrick Henry maybe in the backfield next year.
Right. So you got the receivers. You got Stingley, who came on like a house on fire. You have a lot of the premium positions. Grenard is a free agent, but we'll see. Maybe they'll franchise tag him. And Will Anderson at the edge. Like, a lot of the big-time positions, they're set for a while. And then he showed, he took all these guys that were afterthoughts elsewhere. Desmond King, Cashman, Barnett, Christian Harris, who was a second-year player who stunk as a rookie. And it's like, he made all those guys better. I mean, usually I push back on the, like, well, they're going to be set up for the future. I pushed back on with the Jags last year. I wasn't so sure. Like, this team is the team in the AFC South.
The only problem, though, I think you've got a great head coach, but when you're defensive-minded and, like, Bobby Slowick's taking interviews left and right, it's like you don't want to have C.J. Stroud's offensive coordinator switching every year or two over the course of this rookie contract.
And let's see, just checking the Deshaun Watson trade. They do have the 23rd overall pick from the Cleveland Browns, so they get a first-round pick. They sent a first-round pick to Arizona.
To get Will Anderson.
Yeah, Will Anderson. There you go. Thank you, Greg. And, yes, Chiefs at Ravens. Mahomes v. Lamar next Sunday.
That's a new one for the playoffs.
In a playoffs that has been very difficult to pick because the matchups have all felt pretty even.
And that's as loud as Baltimore has been crowd-wise in a long time. And they quietly have not, like, you have to go back to, like, 2012 when they got to a AFC title game.
Well, this is literally the Ravens' first ever home AFC championship game, which I was surprised to hear.
Right, first since 1970 when they were the Baltimore Colts. I could live without the R-A-V-E-N-S Ravens chant. That's IP that came from Flushing, Queens, in the early 70s, just FYI.
It's a fair comment.
Remember they were doing Play Like a Raven when Rex Ryan was there something like that?
That was like Bard coordinator. Well. All right, let's take a break, and then we'll hit the other two games.
It's backyard barbecue season, so light up the charcoal or fire up the propane and throw some burgers on the grill. Some people like cheeseburgers, others like hamburgers, and people will argue about pickles until the cows come home. But there's one thing that needs no debate. Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. It's so rich and creamy that it instantly makes any burger irresistible. You add Hellmann's and boom, next level burgers. It's that easy. And then there's the side that every backyard burger cries out for, potato salad. Do you want to know the best secret ingredient? You've probably already guessed it. It's Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. There are two kinds of potato salad, deliciously irresistible, rich and creamy potato salad and potato salad made without Hellmann's. It's up to you what you want to serve. For great recipe ideas, visit Hellmann's.com.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of
that. Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Around the NFL, the divisional recap, the flagship program. So, yeah, that is the AFC. Now let's turn to the other side of things, the NFC. And it's time now for the Sunday Drive presented by the first ever Toyota Grand Highlander. Yes, the San Francisco 49ers. It feels like it's been a month since we've seen them on the field. It's been about 3 weeks since they had their full squad out there competing, and they got another upstart team, the Packers, who were upset-minded. But unlike the Houston Texans, they were up for the challenge, the Niners. Woo, it was tight.
First and 10, Green Bay. They have two timeouts left. Love out of the shotgun. Deep drop. Pressure. Gets chased out to his right. Will throw on the run back.
No.
It is intercepted.
He farmed
Go
it.
Go down. Dre Greenlaw. Running back the other way. Secure the ball. He'll run back the other way. They're trying to strip it.
Dre, what are you doing, bro?
Big play, Dre. Goes down. Green Bay has two timeouts left. But the 49ers have the football.
Oh, my goodness. Good call there by Greg Papa. KNBR. If Dre fumbles that ball and it gets recovered by the Packers and then the Packers go on to win, I mean, that would have been one of the more devastating. Stay down, kid.
Yeah.
Anyway, it all worked out for the linebacker and also for his team, the San Francisco 49ers, who benefited from another missed field goal attempt this time. By Anders Carlson of the Packers, whose miss kept it a four-point game late instead of a seven-point game in terms of a lead for the visiting Packers. And then San Francisco and Brock Purdy, who struggled for most of the night in rainy conditions at the Big Bell Bottom, leads the team on a big drive down the field, a big boy drive, ending with a Christian McCaffrey touchdown. That is the difference after that Jordan Love INT we heard. Final score 24-21, and the Niners are back in the NFC title game for the third straight year. Can they get over the hump with Kyle Shanahan? We will see. Mark, that is a game that the Niners were very fortunate to escape and survive, but they did, and now they will be playing for the Super Bowl at home next week.
I just want to hit it from like one angle, and it's like the Brock Purdy side of things, because it kind of felt like anyone, whether you're for or against Brock Purdy in terms of the scope of who he is, the MVP race and everything else, it kind of had something for everyone, because it was the game that kind of could tell you this isn't an MVP level quarterback. And like, look at, it's raining again like it was when he played the Browns, and you're getting this other version of Brock Purdy who's imperfect with the game on the line in this critical moment. But then you also got that final touchdown drive where I thought Brock Purdy, like in a rough and tumble outing, showed that in the end, he really is capable. And like, I think this Niners team, you know, I wondered what would happen to them after the rest that they've had. And they've been so dominant and so unstoppable. This was just like a B minus version of their offense for 85% of it, and they still found a way to get it done.
Here's Purdy on the Niners winning a game that under Shanahan they have struggled to win, coming back from behind in the fourth quarter.
I mean, I think it is important. We were all like, all right, this is it. You know, this is our season. And so for us to capitalize like that was huge for all of us. And then obviously for myself as a quarterback, like, it's good for confidence and all that. But we have too many good players, man, on this team. So many players that are difference makers, and we got a great defense. And so for us to not find a way, it's not right. So for us to finally have a game like this and pull through at the end was huge for all of us. So.
It's so huge, obviously, to just keep this season going. I think to win a Super Bowl, sometimes you got to survive a bad game. And this was it. I mean, they should have lost this game. They were fortunate to win. They made the plays to win. But there were many times it could have gone against them. And if you wanted to be a skeptic of this team and look through a certain lens, anytime they were kind of pushed this year, they crumbled a little bit. And even like the 3-game losing streak, like, They crumbled and they like couldn't stop the bleeding during that 3-game losing streak. Like, Debo Samuel and Trent Williams were out. It's like, look at every other team in the league. Look at the Bills. Look at the Dolphins with all these injury issues, and they found ways to win. And then in that Ravens game too, they let it snowball on them. So I think to stand up in a spot where they really looked like they were about to lose and have both sides of the ball step up after a pretty shaky game from both sides of the ball in the last 8 minutes, and them to play their best ball in the last 8 minutes was huge, because the Packers, Dan, had the ball,
mm-hmm.
first and 10,
mm-hmm.
7:51 to go,
mm-hmm.
up 4 at the 49ers' 24-yard line. At that point in the game, did you think the 49ers had much of a chance to win that game?
No, and I'm mad. This is what we do for a living. And I felt like I kind of nailed the game. I thought the Packers would come in and take that momentum from Dallas. I thought the defense had a chance to, because they were stiffer against Dallas. They did. They played well against San Francisco on defense for the most part in this game. And then they were able to put points on the board and then put pressure on Purdy. And Purdy was making mistakes. But here's the problem. They did all that, but they got turned away in the red zone a couple times. They had a turnover and downs on fourth and less than a yard. They dropped the
questionable
Purdy
spot on that.
Yeah,
one.
Questionable for
but
sure.
Also, an unreal play by Dre Greenlaw to stick
absolutely
Love in the chops.
Purdy did throw the ball for grabs a couple times. They didn't catch it. So that they had, and this is why also, because I don't necessarily believe in the future is bright, you know, plenty more years, because you never know. And the Packers, on balance, it was a successful season. And it was, quote-unquote, house money game here against the Niners. But when you have that team on the ropes like they did, when you kind of outplayed the mighty Niners to get brought down by failure to execute in the red zone, turnover near the red zone, missed field goal, that makes the loss hurt, because it's not like a better team got you on that particular night. You were in position, and you just failed in the stuff that you should be able to handle and execute, and you didn't. And Matt LaFleur, after the game, you know he was hurting, because it was right there in front of him.
I felt like we had plenty of opportunities to kind of put the game out of reach, and unfortunately just didn't do enough. And it's never one play, and it's because I'm sure a lot of it's going to come down to the missed field goal, but there were plenty of opportunities. You go back in the first half and have 3 red zone opportunities and have 6 points. There's a lot of plays out there that it just, if one play goes different, and probably have a different result right now.
And then to kind of put a punctuation on it, Mark, they're still in good shape. They have a chance to push this game to overtime or even win it. And for Love, who had been impeccable for 2 months, and everybody was saying it, not just me, but Brett Favre, to roll
right,
kind of throw a desperation pass late and over the middle that's picked off. He didn't have to do that.
His first down.
He did it, and at the worst time, he looked like a kid again. So these uncharacteristic mistakes that they had not been making during this rise is kind of what got them. Not so much the Niners.
No, it was a tough throw across the body. You're right. He didn't have to do that at all.
Ridiculous.
And if you look at the game, because he was Throwing outside the numbers, he was 12 for 17 for 161 yards and two touchdowns. Pretty flawless in the kind of Jordan Love you've expected. But throwing between the numbers, he was 9 for 16 for 33 yards with two picks, including that game ender. And so it's an unceremonious way for a really incredible season to end for Jordan Love. And you're right, because it's like, you know, we've got Big Funk back there. It's like a Packers fan's like suddenly got to be feeling incredibly hope about the future compared to where you were a couple months ago. But you also are thinking, wait a minute, we pulled this out, we're a team that knows we could beat the Lions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like it is a lost opportunity. And the idea that you're just going to march back here to the Jacksonville Jaguars example, we don't know that.
LaFleur will never, ever get over this loss. I don't know the man personally, but this is head coach nightmare fuel, these type of
to the same team.
Yeah. That was one of the tougher press conferences I've watched. He was so devastated, and he has the cap pulled down low over his eyes, and the way the light was hitting was just shadow, and it was just like he was not trying to put on a poker face. He was so sad about it because he knows it was right there. Love played a pretty flawless game until the end, and then there was just a couple throws. The interception on the tip pass, he just missed the throw. Who was that to the tight end over the middle on the first interception? So that was some bad luck on it too. It was like it tipped up and you got punished for it on a day where your guys, Darnell Savage, drops a pick six right into his breadbasket. Another Purdy dropped later, and they took advantage. And then there was another play on the third down when they could have run more clock out, where he just, him and Aaron Jones weren't on the same page on like a check down. He was hitting all the hard throws, but he didn't hit the easy ones. But even then, there was that first down with the Packers I mentioned, like 7:51 left, and that's where the 49ers stepped up. Warner makes a nice tackle in the open field for a no gain. Bosa gets a quick pressure on Love, and then Carlson, who's been missing a ton of kicks, misses that kick, and he's a rookie. Like all these other rookies, misses it in a big spot, and then you give the 49ers the ball back, and at that point, I'm like, oh, man. Are they going to win this game? I don't know. Their offense really hasn't done anything for a while. And it wasn't like dot after dot by Purdy, but the 3rd and 5 play to Ayuk was a very low percentage play where it took a perfect throw and maybe an even better catch. Both were perfect. Ayuk and Purdy were so good on that play.
Ayuk is on fire!
And then after that, Purdy just made all the right decisions. He made the right reads on like I think it was one check down to the left side where they made a big play, and then he made the nice scramble, and they ran the ball well, and it's like they just finally calmed down in the biggest spot, and you got to give it to him.
But you do wonder, like Deebo Samuel, first head injury, and comes back in the game, then shoulder injury leaves, and it's the kind of thing that, you know, they're talking about could be a multiple-week thing. We don't know exactly where it sits, but it is weird because they have so many weapons, but when Debo's not been on the field for them, it has been it's marked a big change.
Well, it hurts when you lose them like right off the bat. And who is doing this game now? Olsen said how they had basically had information Debo was going to be a huge part of the game.
Right.
You kind of
changed
saw
the
that.
Whole game.
They were like trying to give Juwan Jennings these end arounds and stuff like that.
By the way, while Carlson misses this kick and Ass is missing his kick.
Come on, guys.
Robbie Gould just out there the whole time, then just like finally shrugged his shoulders and was like, I guess I retire.
Gould must not be interested.
Who literally never missed a kick in the postseason, extra point or field goal.
And I mean, Olsen said they asked LaFleur about Carlson and what his thing with Carlson was, and he's like, well, every time he takes a kick, you know, I pray before it. I was like, maybe A, don't tell them that, or tell them that and off the record. And then B, you can't be going to the NFC divisional round game with that attitude. That was tough. And look, they would have tied it up. It's not like they would have won the game. The way that game was going at the end, I feel like the Packers had their chances to put it away, and then they started looking like the really young team. They probably would have lost anyways, but man.
This might betray who I'll be pulling for in the NFC title game, but I don't need to see Brock Purdy against the Ravens defense again if that's how this thing breaks down. I don't trust your guy, Mark.
Then you have to trust Jared Goff.
I know, and that's fair, and we'll see how that game goes. We're going to get to the Lions in a minute. But, yeah, I thought he was very shaky in this game, and we'll see if it was the weather or just a rough night. And I do – you got to give him credit. They let him on the drive at the end, and they let him on the drive. But, man, I thought the Niners were so fortunate. And I don't – and one thing we disagree with on, Greg, you were saying earlier today, like – this is the game. Like sometimes teams need to survive a game like that, and then they can get back to being dominant. I'm not quite there with the Niners. I'm curious what version we get next Sunday, and we're going to find out.
I just think the body of work their offense has shown and defense, and Steve Wilks, I think, ended up coaching a pretty good game by the end of this game. It wouldn't surprise me. I'm pulling for the Lions, but it would not surprise me if the 49ers recapture their form, because I do think the weather was a big part of it. He has small hands. I don't know if it's not always a small hands thing, but I mean, he was really bad in this game. He was worse in this game than he was in the Ravens game, which lost him the MVP and he threw the four picks. I don't even think it's a question. Like, he was legit bad. I was curious. I checked the PFF.
I would say it's a question.
He was pretty bad in that game too, but that game
he won this game with a drive at the end of regulation.
That game he was his normal self, yeah. Except for like two or three bad decisions.
He could have
bad
thrown six
throws.
Interceptions in that game.
This game, like, his normal throws were bad. Everything was bad. Decisions were bad. He wasn't seeing the field. Like, I checked the PFF score. I was curious, like, and it was, it was like a 58. The only score that was worse this year was that Browns game, also in the rain.
Right. I think the takeaway is inclement weather affects Brock Purdy, where it may not have any effect.
Supposed to be
on
nice next week in San Francisco, by the way.
But Dan, when you say the overall body of work of Purdy, but also just the Niners offense in general, I feel like you're a little down on them there's a lot of evidence to suggest
they weren't explosive in this game. It was kind of shocking how they couldn't.
I just
get
don't think
play.
That predicts who they're going to be, against Detroit next week. But no, Deebo Samuel matters a lot for this offense.
If Brock went out there next Sunday and went 27 for 32, I wouldn't be stunned.
Right.
But does he have a stink bomb in him still? I can't rule that out either. I'd be concerned as a Niners fan, because I've gotten to the point now, and I've seen my share of bad quarterbacks, where, and he's certainly not one of them, but when he drops back and that ball is heading towards the second level of defense, you kind of hold your breath and be like, oh, where's this one going? Like, is he?
Not to the level of Jimmy G, though, but okay.
But this,
I could continue to defend Brock Purdy, but I hit a bad game.
I'm in the middle on it. Like, his story is great. I'm
taking the story out of it.
Right,
I'm just talking about the guy on the
but
field.
I just look at him as like a second year quarterback, even if he wasn't like a late round pick and where he's at and stuff. And maybe I'm biased. He's no Tom Brady, but it's like people think back to this Tom Brady that like never existed. Like, Tom Brady had games worse than like the Super Bowl. He literally didn't do anything until the final quarter, but he didn't make the big mistakes.
Not Tom
like,
Brady.
No, I'm not even saying he is. My point is you can have a second year quarterback that you're carrying along in some certain games, but you can do that when you're supposed to be this monster team. And I do give their defense. I know the Packers struggled in the red zone, but there's an opposing defense there in the red zone. And I thought their defense kept them in this game with those red zone stops. And Greenlaw, to me, in some ways, is a defining 49er, and he gets overlooked. He kind of reminds me of Navarro Bowman with the old 49ers. He hit Tucker Kraft so hard in the eye that, Kraft had to come out of it. He just blasted Tucker Kraft. One play later, he blasts Jordan Love to get a fourth down stop. Then he gets two interceptions in the second half. He's just like a beast, Bosa showed up at the very end of the game. Warner was great in this game. They've got so many guys that I just feel like eventually they'll find a way to overwhelm you.
Absolute studs in the middle of the defense. It's just it's a cottage industry. I'm probably being too hard on Brock. Mark, I apologize. I am being too hard on him.
Don't have to apologize. If you're looking at yesterday's game, yes.
Maybe Sam Darnold's coming running out of the tunnel in the third quarter.
That is
oh my God! Is that Sam Darnold's music?
If that's your angle, then this is. I think we understand where this is all coming from.
I knew it wasn't going to happen.
Not my angle.
But the idea that Sam Darnold is going to come out and
oh my God, that's Sam Darnold's music.
Okay, so
it's like eighth team.
when they couldn't score, when I think it was another three and out in the third quarter, and then they were set up with a short field, and then they had to settle for the field goal. And then they punted again the next drive. I actually, for a second, thought, is it that crazy to go to Sam Darnold right now? I actually didn't think they'd do it, but he was struggling so bad at that point in the game that I was just like, man, maybe
that's
the commission.
It's so destabilizing, though.
Yes.
It's such a destabilizing, good, like, coaching.
It wouldn't have
that.
Been a
it would
decision.
Be, it would be a bit of a flip of the panic switch.
Right.
I think it would, to go to Darnold at this point. But they like him, and Purdy's got to play.
Had that throw to Kittle. You know, it was just, yeah, he did have that throw to Kittle. The, you know, he had some
when that ball comes out of his hand right now, are we sure where it's going? Is it going to the right team?
I think we're
if it's
overreacting.
If it's dry, but yes, he got a hall pass because that would have been the conversation all off season if the Packers had just caught those interceptions and he got a break.
Mark, who is your hall pass?
It is going to be sun swept and 58 degrees next week with little wind, and you're going to be right back where you want them to be.
And
you know, you two are unbelievably annoying to hang out with most of the time.
That's a good
one. That is from the past.
Randy, I know
the
you're
ghost of Sessler past.
I know, Randy, that was heartbreaking. It is crazy how many, and I know like Jets and Browns fans don't want to hear about it, but I think it's true that being a fan like of a team like the Packers, but the Packers specifically, the Bills now are joining this territory, and losing this many heartbreaking playoff
games. Get the violins out. The
so,
tiniest one.
Why
possible.
Can't this both be true?
All right, Mr. Patriots fan, please educate me on
no,
how
I'm
I
not,
feel.
They both I'm not talking about true. The Patriots, because the Patriots got six titles. The Packers, from if you're doing a ranking of the most painful losses, and Packers fans who are masochistic were doing this last night since 2007, this maybe isn't even in the top 10, which is crazy, and it's a heartbreak. You got the NFC Championship. That nothing will top that. 2014, you had the one against San Francisco in 2021 where they couldn't score. They had losing to Eli immediately after going having a one loss team.
That was rough.
Yeah, they had Favre losing to Eli in overtime. They lost to the Cardinals twice in overtime. They lost to the Kaepernick two different times. There's a couple more NFC Championship games under Kyle Shanahan I haven't even mentioned before we even get to this one. It is crazy. How
I have
many
a great
times.
Idea.
Yes,
you could actually follow the model of my favorite team. Just don't make the playoffs for 13
I know.
Straight years.
It's just saying on that.
Just like an utter void, like a black hole.
We don't have to compare. I'm just saying it is
saying
got to be painful.
If one more person tweets me, it's time to put the Packers on the pain rankings.
No,
shut up. All right, I do want to hear from Randy, though. Big Funk.
I just wanted to jump in and chime in about how Eric and I bonded through our sorrow before the game started, because it seemed like every network was running compilations of worst losses for the Packers and the Bills. You know, it's like we can't escape it. And the boogeyman won this round again. I feel it's tough.
It's tough.
I get where you're coming from, though, because
yeah.
The Packers have it nice, sort of, I guess. I don't know.
Not sort of. You definitely have it nice. You have another young superstar quarterback.
But what does it matter?
I just think, though, if you went through all this, then you will come back and say, you know what? You had a point
all
those years ago.
I think it depends on how you look at it. Sure, but at the end of the year, it's like the Jets and the Packers, they're both in Cancun right now. So
right.
It's like,
but there
really
is,
won?
I think, Greg, you're kind of double talking here with your points here. Because you were just saying a couple shows ago, you got to enjoy the experience.
Absolutely.
Like, the Packers had a really fun ride this year. Look,
absolutely.
From Thanksgiving until 5 minutes to play.
Well, and
last
it opens
night.
The door
yeah.
for the future. Like they, like there were questions whether they even had a quarterback, and you do have one.
Right,
don't get
where,
me wrong.
That's what other teams do.
I set up great. I just mean in yes. that day, in the moment, it doesn't ease that pain, and that's a particular type of pain that unfortunately
but I know
the Jets
that too.
Don't even know.
I have other fan base. Like yes. I said, I'm a Yankee fan. I understand that side of it too.
Yeah,
I'm almost uniquely qualified to tell you that both are suck, but there's nothing worse than just being a laughingstock and never even
no doubt
getting a chance. Like it's
no question.
They're two
they're
different.
Quite, they're but, quite different.
But it is very. I totally empathize, and that's how we open the show with Bills fans who deserve a chip. They're still waiting. And this felt like a special year, and it wasn't. And for Packers fans, even though this was a prototypical house money game for Green Bay, to have a kind of a win almost in your back pocket and let it get away, you don't want to do that in the playoffs because you just never, ever know. All right. That was the Sunday Drive presented by Toyota. Let's go places. Learn more at toyota.com/Grand Highlander. All right, let's finish it up. The other NFC game. Back to Detroit. Yes, the place was hopping once again.
Mayfield takes him straight to the line with a minute 40. Baker leans in. There's the snap. Blitz comes. Mayfield back, loads, throws. Pick up the line.
Lions! Intercepted by the Lions! Intercepted by the Lions! Derek Barnes! Derek Barnes! Derek Barnes! Oh, baby! 1:33 to go! The Lions are going to San Francisco!
Yes!
Derek Barnes with the interception! Oh, baby! Stand up, Ford Field! Look at this!
Woo!
Look at this!
Wait, do I have the timing wrong? Or are we in a simulation? Was the Detroit game before the Packer game?
No.
No, it was today.
Oh my God.
It was the earlier game today.
That was today?
That feels like 47 years.
We were on Sky Sports at halftime.
I don't remember that.
I am with you on that. It does feel like it happened weeks ago.
I've been infected with the rage zombie virus. You're right, that was today. I thought like Dan's already booking the San Francisco trip. No, he was right. Dan Miller with the call with Lomas Brown. Lomas, one of my favorite tropes. He's just the color guy screaming yes because a great moment happened, WXYT, for the team. And that was the interception of Baker Mayfield, the decisive play in a 31-23 win for the Lions over the Bucs. Greggy, you locked the former team of Around the NFL. And in another game where the underdog came to play, this is a game I believe is 17-17 in the second half, Detroit, like Baltimore, not at the same level, but took control in crunch time when other teams might wilt. They said, no. No one's beating us in our building, not in this spot.
Yeah, I've been taking these last 2 weeks that the Lions' defense has been opportunistic and really contributed to those wins, and you heard it there. They got just enough stops and got the interception at the end. But I also think how when it was 10-10 going into the second half and the Lions don't get anything done on their first drive, after that, the Lions that we know take over and get touchdowns on back-to-back-to-back drives, and there was a 3rd and 15 in there to Amon-Ra St. Brown that just says so much about the Lions. They protected up perfectly. Tampa could not get home today with their 4-man pass rush, and the blitz really wasn't that effective either. And they just have a laser on Zion McCollum, who just came into the game, and the Lions are so good at that. Ben Johnson is always attacking weaknesses. Like, a new guy comes in, it's fresh meat, 3rd and 15. There's no way we're running the ball here to, like, set up a closer field goal or make a shorter fourth down. No, we're going for it. Ragnow, who was in and out of this game, was an animal, protects it up. They hit it. Amon-Ra breaks a tackle to get the first down on that play, and it was just really bold play calling like that throughout. Their running game wasn't working, so they called the 3rd and 1 kind of fake where they get it to Wright. What is that guy's name? Brock Wright down the sideline, the same play they used against the Jets. Like, everything they touched, they went for a 4th and goal as part of that. Touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. It started it off. They go for it, like, being bold, and then their players executing it and just playing smart. They looked like the Lions we've seen all year today.
Yeah, they keep emphasizing who they've been and how they got here. And they're not changing from that. Dan Campbell refuses to shift identities. Dialing up Craig Reynolds on that 4th and goal.
Right.
A surprise character in that situation. You're right. That incredible 16-yarder to Amon-Ra St. Brown on 3rd and 15. Goff, you know, if we're going to praise Brock Purdy on that final drive, Goff in the fourth quarter hit his first 11 passes for 131 yards and a touchdown on those two long touchdown drives. So it's like Goff was money when it mattered most. And, you know, this defense gave up 408 yards to a Buccaneers team that did not quit, but it really was going to come down to a big mistake. And for as good as Baker Mayfield has been in these two games in this stretch and the best version of himself, like, that is the other side of Baker Mayfield. That mistake occurs, and it snuffed out what could have been a pretty spicy final couple of minutes. Because the Bucs, I give them credit, like, they're not a great team, but they fought really hard in this game. And it's like they believe in Baker Mayfield, but the Lions, same with Goff, and Goff talked about just feeling a calm throughout the fourth quarter. And I think this version, who Jared Goff is right now and the way he operated in the final minutes, says so much about this Lions offense.
Yeah, it went from 17-17 to 31-17 in a blink. And to Mayfield and Tampa Bay's credit, they go right down the field. They get the touchdown. They fail on the two-point conversion and then get the stop. And you're thinking, this could be interesting. But Baker, makes that a big mistake. Here's Baker after the game. Obviously, you saw it in the highlight or immediately after the play happened, hanging his head. He knew he had a chance to do something special, and they could not get it done.
it sucks. I feel like my heart just got ripped out, but it's football is a complex game, but it's also simple. It comes down to taking care of the ball. And in 2 minute drives like that, when you know you're going to have four downs to use, just a bad mistake by me. And it sucks because I know what type of group we've had all year, that we fought to get to this point. We fought to be in that game. We weren't supposed to be here by any measures, but we believed in each other and we fought for it. And so, yeah, this one's going to weigh on me for a while.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting, and I think they said it during the telecast, that these are both players, Baker Mayfield and Jared Goff, number one overall picks, and they had apparently spoken, this was a couple of weeks back before this matchup was set in stone. They had a conversation, Mayfield and Goff, and they talked about how when you're a number one overall pick, you're kind of at the top of the mountain and you have to find a new chip on your shoulder. And for these guys, both their original teams, the Browns and Rams, essentially quit on them. And now here they are resurrecting their careers. And here's Goff, one win from getting back to the Super Bowl. Let's listen to Jared Goff.
It's a credit to all the guys in there. We've said this a million times about how it's the same group. It's not like we've, you know, added a ton. It's a lot of the same guys, and Brad and Dan have been very intentional about bringing in those type of guys who can handle moments like today and moments like last week and ups and downs of a season. And I think it's all been intentionally done by them, and we're not here by accident.
Now, Goff avoided the negative plays today, and when he mentions that with Brad Holmes, it really is insane to think about how many of the draft picks, all the focus has been on this year's rookie class, but when Derek Barnes made that play, it reminded me of all three of these classes because they've done a really good job developing players. Derek Barnes is not like a household name, but if you think back to week one, who is making all those huge run stops and just stuffing the Chiefs and big plays, play after play, it's Derek Barnes and guys like Melifonwu, who they've developed slowly and has eventually turned into this great part of this three safety tandem with Gardner Johnson and Penei Sewell and St. Brown are draft picks, and Hutchinson had another nice game, and just throughout it's all these homegrown players, and I think you get a sort of cohesion between the coaching staff and the players that is pretty rare, and maybe can kind of carry them through a great game like this, which was weird. Mid third quarter, Mark, the Bucs were averaging 7.3 yards per play. And the Lions were averaging 3.7. It was kind of a strange game where the Lions were being opportunistic, but I wasn't watching it and thinking, ooh, the Lions are a much better team here. I thought they were in trouble, and they kind of stabilized and played their best at the end.
Well, they're learning. I think, you know, it's like the Detroit journey is they're learning how to win games like this and to kind of work your way out of not your best performance. You know, the Niners did it, but the Niners have playoff experience. They kind of know they know how to do it. I think it's really impressive. And I, you know, it's like they remind me of the Rams, Brad Holmes coming from Rams world, like Jahmyr Gibbs, someone that they were kind of like, why on earth are the Lions picking this running back this high in the draft? Watching Jahmyr Gibbs, like he has been a complete difference maker. Just the speed alone and what he did today in key moments.
Unreal.
It's like every one of the players you mentioned, all these rookies, second year, third year guys, they've hit on them over and over. And the emphasis is that Jared Goff, who they were pretty plainly honest about from the beginning, we believe in him. We'll see what happens. They didn't just chase quickly another rookie quarterback to supplant him with. And they've made the best version of Jared Goff come alive because of that belief. I think Jared Goff had his confidence cracked like an egg coming out of that Rams experience. And it's like there is something to the mentality of an athlete to say, we believe in you. Go do it. And now here you are as Detroit Lions fans.
Yeah, everyone thought they had Jared Goff nailed. Like, this was a guy from, you know, Northern California, a number one draft pick who really wasn't deserving of it. He was a bust. And then, oh, he was actually, he had some good years, but he was propped up by Sean McVay's brilliant offense at the time. And then he was shipped off to Detroit to be a starter for maybe a year before he became a backup the rest of his career. No, because like Dan Campbell said, like, you're good enough for Detroit. And the fact that Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell and that organization saw in Goff, not a bridge guy, but a guy that could be a major part of this operation moving forward. Nobody else saw that. And the building the roster the way they have, people didn't see that. You think back to the opening press conference. And in fact, I think we have some sound from Campbell on that. The opening press conference where it's infamous. I'll tell you how infamous it is. The biting the kneecaps press conference, which remember the Lions were a laughing stock at the time. Before that season started, This is 2 years ago. Colleen and I did the first Hard Knocks podcast series, and we noticed that it wasn't in the first episode. We're like, oh, of course that's going to be in the episode. They're going to play off that. Then we were told, no, don't talk about it either. The Lions and Campbell were sensitive that that was being taken and put in a different way.
That's how he was known.
He was like a cartoon character, the way he looked, the way he talked, the way he was saying. And everyone, like Jared Goff and so many of these other guys, we underestimated the Lions. Here's Campbell talking about the beginning of his tenure and how that has changed now.
Dan, that first press conference has kind of become legend. Recaps, all that. Initially, though, there was a lot of like, what did the Lions hire with this guy? Did you hear that then, and what do you think?
You're probably one of them. To each his own.
Talk about a
that last little
great line. You know it. It's been sticking in his craw for a long time, but they're getting the last laugh now.
That's awesome. It's also Campbell sticking it to the whole like people were saying back that you it's probably you. He is definitely someone I bet that
kind of everybody was though.
Kept track.
We had our fun with the Lions at that time, and Campbell, who you know didn't have a big resume, but we're saying Mark, like, damn, if they and. This is do not tell the Lions. Do not tell Dan Campbell that they're playing with house money in San Francisco. This team believes that they can win a Super Bowl. And if they ever did it, Seth Dog, if they ever even just made the Super Bowl, but if they won it, he's Mike Ditka. He is a national celebrity of the highest order when you talk about sports figures in America. Like this, he's become a star and seize the moment, because I'll name another one. Remember Rex Ryan?
Yep.
He became a star overnight. Yep. And again, you think, because they went to the Jets in 9-10, they went to the AFC Championship game 2 years in a row. You think it's just going to go on forever. Maybe this is the moment for the Detroit Lions right now. And but I will say this, even if things do not go well next week in San Francisco, you can't take away what happened these 2 weeks, these two home games, and the wins and the crowd and the feel around it. This is, for Lions fans, this will be a season that will be viewed warmly no matter what happens.
Yeah, because before you had Ditka's 1985 Bears, you had the 84 Bears that learned how to do what the 85 Bears did. And I think you mentioned that in the screening room, and I love the DNA, the comparison between Ditka, Campbell, and Rex Ryan, because Rex Ryan came in and said, I don't care what we've been, we're going to be something different now. And it resonated.
We're not going to kiss Belichick's rings. Exactly.
I don't care what the order was here before. It's a new order. And Ditka took a Bears team that was lost at sea for a long time, did the same thing. And who's been more lost at sea than the Lions? And it's a lot to do with Dan Campbell's just willing this team to do it his own way. And he was doubted because of his personality out of the gate. But they believe in him with every fiber of their being.
And his ability to hit on big decisions. Like Aaron Glenn, I thought, had a really good day today. And I know they were giving up a lot of yards, but if you think of why the Bucs drives kept stopping, it's because they kept finding the free rusher to get to Baker Mayfield, who ended up taking a few sacks. I thought Baker actually played quite well in this game until that interception. The first interception came off a drop. Evans finishes with 147. Baker throws for 349. He had the 4th-and-15 play to keep their season alive. He had the play where he almost was sacked, and then he's rolling out and makes,
right,
you know, one of the best plays any quarterback made all weekend. And yet, I think the coaching for the Lions is just better. And I compare it to the Bucks, where Bowles has been bolder this season. He's kind of gotten some pop in Tampa of like, oh, it's a new Todd Bowles. But today there was
electric, that Todd Bowles.
It's just a couple spots. There was a 4th-and-1 at his own 35 in the first half. And I know it's your own 35, but the way that game was going, they were running the ball really well. Rashad White ran for 6.1 yards per carry. Edmonds went 4.8, and he punts there. They kicked the 50-yard field goal, which I'm not going to kill him, but it was a 4th-and-5. Who's their kicker? He's been great all year. Like, I literally think that was his first missed kick all year that wasn't a block. Chase McLaughlin's been kind of under the radar as like having a great season.
He's in the top 5 of my kicker ranking.
And then at the very end, they're down a touchdown, and I know it's transgressive, but it was 4th-and-4, I think at their own 30 or so. And that's just a no-thought punt there. But the way that game was going, I was like, man, the Lions are just going to go down the field and score a touchdown here. Is it that crazy to go for that 4th-and-4? He didn't even think about it, and they did go down and score the touchdown. So I thought he was not that bold in some big spots.
That's kind of Bowles. I mean, that's part of it. But And they have a big decision to make with Baker, who really outperformed his contract and had a nice year overall for that team. And we're going to see what happens next. I think we got to give the last word to Dan Campbell, who gave us some thoughts on this Lions team and this moment in the city in which they play.
Well, I think it's important, right? It's not the first thing you think of if you go to L.A. or just in general, right? You got the sun, you got the beach, you got plenty of other things going on. And here, man.
That's fire.
Man, it's harsh winters, right? Auto industry, blue collar. things aren't always easy. And I just think that's what we're about. And that was... you want something the city can be proud of. Though you can look at those guys and say, man, I can back that guy. I can back that team. I can resonate with those group of guys.
I feel attacked. I
live in Los Angeles. Dropped on Southern California.
With the sun. Every week for me is just a war. Just
right.
In my home. It's just right? A battle to my wife and I just to survive and grind through with the two maniac boys and the pressures.
The traffic.
Of being on an internationally known podcast. Yes. Don't give me that look, Rosenthal.
No, I'm with you.
Oh, don't give me that resting Greg face.
I'm giving you, Dan Campbell, that look. Oh, L.A. with their beaches. Hey, when we drove to Walker's basketball game Thursday, we had to park underneath indoors because it was raining outside. Usually we park on the street. But we wanted to get it, under the roof.
That's
we parked inside.
And when I took
perfect example, Greg.
When I took my dog Captain to the beach on Friday, right around sunset, and my boys brought a frisbee, there was a sign outside that beach that said "No dogs allowed," even in the off season.
Yeah, and I'd say there are times if you were to buy an ice cream cone, you've got to get into an inside area so that the sun and the warmth don't melt it prematurely while you're trying to eat it.
Thank you. So, Dan,
I did literally
we're waiting for your apology.
Go to the beach this morning because on the West Coast, another nice thing. It's like, a nice noon start for the NFL. We'll get out.
I think Dan Campbell's nice proving his point without having to retort. But that is very nice. And we will see what the Lions do. I would love. I mean, I did have about third quarter of Bills Chiefs. I started to openly daydream about the idea of us being in Vegas and fans from Detroit and Buffalo pouring into the city on Friday afternoon and what that scene would be. We lost the Bills, unfortunately, today, but I'm not necessarily rooting for... I am rooting for the Lions. How can you not root for the Lions? I mean, so I think a lot of people across the country are going to be pulling for the Lions, but look, their opponent, the 49ers, they're shinier. They're sexier. They're Californian too. And they've been trying to get over this hump for years as well. They haven't not won the Super Bowl since 1995.
I had a patty cake around the Packers and the impossible nature of what their fans have been through. Like Niners fans have been through a lot too.
Tough
Super Bowl loss.
That would have been a brutal loss for the 49ers. Do you want to guess the spread?
Yeah, let's do this. Hang on. Let me think about it. Packers. Gotta get this right. All right, so we got
Niners, Lions.
I'm going to say they're going to put the Niners, they're going to install them at 4.5.
I'd say 5.5,
7. Wow.
Okay.
Interesting.
I mean, they were 9.5 against the Packers.
I just thought there'd be some more respect. And then the other game, Baltimore, Kansas City. That's a tough one. I'm going to say right now, Baltimore -3.
Baltimore 3.5.
3.5 is right on the number. There you go, Mark.
There you go, Mark.
You got a future in this.
How about that, Mark?
I do not have a future.
Future rainmaker.
Not in this, not when we're not being employed by this company.
All right, so there you go. That is the breakdown of divisional round weekend. There are only 3 games left in this season. Oh, one more thing. Big Funk pointed out, shot me a little note, that there is a photo, and this is for people watching on YouTube, of Eric... our producer, who really a great effort, watching this game upstairs.
I'm basically hiding under a desk at this point.
What is going on?
You're behind a preschool basketball hoop, that plastic, the Tyke one, and you're sitting against the windowsill, but kind of tucked away like a raccoon that's been hit by a car and is like under a bush.
The basketball that comes with that child playpen basketball hoop went across the office when we missed the field goal.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
It was heaved.
And I just, again, to circle back on that, I totally get the frustration of the teams and fan base that can't get over the hump. That is because it is with the Bills. It's Super Bowl or bust, and everything else feels like.
But if you think about it,
at the bottom of the hill.
It does suck to lose like that.
Yeah.
Where are you going to go with this, Greg?
But
there we go.
But like most people have to wait for the podcast to be recorded and then edited and all this stuff. You get to listen to it live for free right off the bat. Yeah.
Right. And then he has to kind of listen back to it for the edit.
Yeah.
This is the perk. This is the perk of the job, guys.
Pinch yourself.
All right. That's it. We're going to be back on Tuesday. I'm going to tease it again. Colleen Wolf will rejoin us on Tuesday.
We'll see.
Tiny Box Hour. And, three games left. Three games left. Heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired. But as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you. Burgers are best fresh from the grill. Well, more specifically, burgers with Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. It's so rich and creamy that it instantly makes any burger irresistible. And what backyard barbecue is complete without some potato salad? Not just any potato salad, of course. Potato salad highlights the rich, creamy goodness of Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. So if you want to take your barbecue season to the next level, stock up on Hellmann's Real Mayonnaise. For great recipe ideas, visit Hellmann's.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.